talk, viewers. Welcome to the Watchmen podcast, your number one source for all things on the HBO series Watchmen, which has been on everybody's mind since yesterday. Today, no frills, no chills, only a few chills. Since we're going to go and we're going to go through the episode step by step, frame by frame, just like Wendy and I used to do for you on the late lamented Swamp Thing radio. But I don't know about you, Wendy, I am definitely feeling like the show is going to have a lot to talk about. What about you guys? You agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So shall we start at the very beginning?
God.
So I can bring the comics to the beginning before we start to get into the real historical stuff, which is very important. But to put the scene in the beginning in kind of a comic book context, you see two major motifs that are referenced right off the bat. The first motif being kind of a Batman homage, when there is a little boy in a theater with his mom watching a movie about Bass Reeves. And in this movie, Bass Reeves was a real person. He was the real first Black Marshall West of the Mississippi. And so this movie is a silent film. I don't think it's obviously not a real one, but it might be based on a real one. I don't know. But in this movie, he wears a mask. And Batman, on the night that his parents were killed, Bruce Wayne, was in the movie theater either watching, I think sometimes the original, it didn't say what movie they were watching, but sometimes
it was Mask of Zorro.
Yeah, they use Zorro in the modern
But they've stuff, used a couple, but... yeah, it's usually Mask of Zorro. They've used a couple other, but it's another masked freedom fighter movie, which was kind of, in the very first one, they just said it was a movie, but later they kind of added different movies. They were all kind of, to give kind of reason why Batman decided to put on the mask. But it was a movie theater. He was watching a movie, Vigilante. We can talk about that movie in a minute. But his parents, you know, obviously the riot starts probably before he started watching the movie. My guess is they were trying to distract. At some point, his father comes in and they go away. And this thing with losing your parents coming out of a movie, that's Batman. But after they leave the theater, it kind of switches to a Superman motif. When I first saw this, I thought I was just kind of blown away. I'm like, wait, are they? And then it just kept going, and it was just so well crafted, almost shot for shot, where the father, kind of like Jor-El, putting his son into the capsule, put his son into the back of the buggy or some basket in the back of the buggy, and sent him off. And there was no room for the mom and dad, just the room for to get the child to safety. And the little boy, he gives the little boy a note, you know, saying, watch over this boy, or watch over this child. I don't remember which exactly, but something like that. And he puts him in the basket and he sends him off. And the little boy watches at the little hole out of the gunshot hole in the back of the box. He watches as his world kind of explodes, because there's someone in the plane throwing Molotov cocktails, and it was, or maybe grenades, I don't know. But at that point, then he wakes up in a field, and it's not a cornfield, but it's a field, like Superboy woke up in, or like Supergirl. And walks over to the baby crying, and where Superman was wrapped up in the flag of the House of El, the baby is wrapped up in an American flag. And I thought that this whole image where you are seeing, and it's got to be fairly clear across the board that you're seeing the story of Superman, you know, as told from, you know, a shameful historical event that pretty much people have tried to bury for 100 years. But giving you that perspective, it kind of shows you what you're going to have, where things that you thought you knew are being turned on their heads in a way that you didn't expect.
True.
It was pretty horrific once you realize where you are, what's about to happen, what's going to happen.
Can we talk about a second? Because I think that somebody mentioned on Twitter, I believe it was, actually, no, unfortunately, I do not remember the name of the person on Twitter who mentioned it, but the idea that a comic book movie was taking a comic book origin story and teaching it was teaching more about America's racist history than a lot of us knew. Especially the only reason why I was vaguely aware of this was because I make an effort to try and learn about these things because that's what you can do. So when this hit me watching the show, I was freaked out. How did everybody else feel when that hit you? When we all realized what was going on?
I had heard about the Tulsa massacre. I mean, a long time ago, my dad used to go on rants about Black history. He wanted to make sure that I knew. So I knew random factoids about Cleveland history and all kinds of stuff because my dad wanted me to know like everything about, you know, our history and what we weren't taught in schools. I wasn't expecting that at all. I remember seeing people's initials reactions coming out of New York Comic Con, and they were saying there was a reference to a historical event, and they couldn't believe it, that it was tied to that. And I just wasn't expecting that. And it was so, it was just hard to watch. And yeah, I couldn't really watch most of it, to be honest. And I've watched the episode, like, I think 3 times already. And every time I just kind of keep skimming through it because it's just hard to watch. And someone pointed out, and I didn't even realize the first time I'd watched it, I kept looking away, but someone pointed out that the entire sequence, not once was the N-word used at all. And I thought that was like, oh yeah, you can still portray and write our history in a way that doesn't degrade us or glorify us or glorify our pain or turn it into, misery porn. And I thought that was, I knew out of the gate that this was going to be something a lot different than what we're used to. So yeah, it was intense, but whew, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say first I saw the Tulsa in 1921, and my background is, I grew up in the Southeast in Atlanta. So when we went over like Black history and civil rights and even like Jim Crow and all that kind of stuff, we didn't really we stayed mostly in the Southeast, that context of it. And I did grow up in a majority Black area. I am Black. My mother is not American by birth, but so that affects like some of the context that I'm raised up in and taught in and stuff like that. But I asked two of my friends, because I did not remember learning anything about this in school or anything like that. And I do feel like they did their best to really just my education growing up. I feel like generally they did a good job, but I asked two friends of mine. One of them I went to elementary school with and then high school. And the other one I went to middle school and then high school with. And they both said they do not remember learning about it in school, which I found quite interesting. Because, I mean, I figured, okay, maybe I just forgot. And maybe it just went over my head or something. But they really didn't, teach us about this at all. So when I see Tulsa in 1921, I'm wondering, okay, is that significant? So I didn't exactly pause it at that point. But my internet went out, 15 minutes in. So when my internet was out, I have a Roku player, so on my TV, I couldn't connect and keep watching. So I was on the internet, just the computer internet. And I was like, okay, fine, let me look this up, see what this is. Then I saw that it was a real event. I was like, oh, okay, that's something right there. But since I didn't know it was real, maybe, or it's based on something real, it hit kind of differently. I didn't think it, I guess I was almost detached to it in a way. It was just kind of, okay, violence, violence, violence. And, I mean, I could tell what was going on, but it still felt kind of odd in a way, because I was detached in a way. But I don't know. I guess just watching it, it was a little weird. But I did catch, I guess I almost saw it more in the context of how Wendy was saying, okay, that's kind of a Superman allegory kind of way. But
don't get me wrong,
No, yeah, I definitely caught it at the end with when he looked, actually, when I literally I thought of him as Kara and picking up little baby Clark, wrapped up in the that's literally what I caught at the end, and I was like, that's really cool. But no,
yeah,
I,
you were not in that context, Larissa. Yeah.
They'll say the first time, and I think it's important too, the first time you see the first Klansman, and it just sends chills down your spine.
Yeah, like you can, okay, just, that's what's going on.
So one thing I want to keep in mind is that they spent a lot, they gave a good shot to that guy's face. I'm wondering if that's something we're supposed to take note of. Like maybe there's a connection to current characters, even though I know it's a long time later. But there may
well,
be some connection.
There's some connection. We can kind of tell, but you know, we'll get there. We'll get there.
We'll get there later in the episode. So it's also like that. I want to put in, and you know, it's one time a long, long time ago, I shot a movie, and there were two Nazis in it, and or two German soldiers. They weren't even Nazis, but they had to wear the German soldier uniforms for this movie that was set during World War II. And I just remember being, these were like two surfer dudes, like two of the like most peacenik, liberal surfer dudes you've ever met. And then they put on those uniforms, and I was terrified. And that's what that made me feel like when you see the guy, suddenly the Klan guy comes out of the corner of your eye, and it's just like, oh my gosh. You know, it's just like, I was so scared. I can't even imagine. It's just, it was so well shot. The other thing I want to, oh, the gender swap here too, is that the father comes in, he gives the gun to the mom, and he takes the baby.
Yeah, I like that.
I thought that was good. Beautiful.
So here's I'm gonna most of because I was the first person you guys well I was live tweeting so maybe I was more aware of stuff as it was happening. My first thought was this is definitely a fictional reality because there are no only black towns, and I'm not proud that I thought that. But I think that the whole point of this podcast is to, you know, discuss these issues to the best of our ability. And then, you know, and then I remembered and I went and I hit Google really quick and I was like, oh my God, this is very much a real thing. And I think that goes to show you, and there were a couple of moments in this, the episode two, where there were things that seem alien, but that really aren't. Without going into too much detail, because it happens later in the episode, I did a piece. I was writing something for something, and I did a piece on. I was looking up adoption statistics, and two of the characters. We're going to go into that. Two of the characters who are black adopt white children, and that never happens. In fact, I think that in addition to the Tulsa massacre, seeing that adoption system and story was like. The first time I've ever seen that, like ever. And it's, as a person who lives below the poverty line personally, I do think about that a lot. You know, how systems work and things. So I was amazed at how things that should be commonplace seemed very otherworldly. And then you go back and you realize, oh, these things do exist. They do happen. You need to be aware of them. And I thought that it was a really nice way of waking people up because I love America, but y'all, yeah. As American, I was gonna say, most Americans, large chunks of us, myself included, have the intelligence of a wet sack of rocks left out in the rain. So, and emotional awareness. So, like, it's this, that's just where we're at. And I was just like using something that people pay more attention to than the reality superheroes to do this. I was like, okay, this is everything that we thought it was going to be. And I am really, really excited. So
I think that's the point though. I think that this is, they're going to mix it up. So some of these things are turning what we know on its head. And some of these things are revealing that what we know, this is reality. And what we know is wrong about it. Yeah, again, there's a lot of stuff going on here.
Yeah.
That's the one layer. And I think there's some very interesting things as we go through it. I do think that, you know, this is a nice, you know, setup where you have, you know, the kid who is, you know, living a life, you know, kind of an ideal life in this like utopian world with, you know, watching his hero on TV, always, you know, getting the bad guy with full respect of the white community. And then reality sets in. And that's the wake up call you need to kind of start you on the whole journey.
I think, but you can also tell, like, from beginning to end, like, that's what shaped that last image of, like, goodness, or shaped that kid's perspective.
Well,
yeah.
That would
also, like, that's why they show you
Superman and Batman, is because there's two, you've got two origins really mixed up into one origin. One goes one way and one goes the other way. One goes towards light, one goes towards the dark. They're both heroes, but which path will the kid choose? Mm-hmm. And you know, it's definitely going to shape both Clark and Kara and Bruce. So mm-hmm. it will shape this kid too. But yeah. Shall we move on to the traffic stop?
Oh yeah.
So since there's a lot to talk about, so pardon us if we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants here. What were the initial impressions of that scene from everyone?
Which scene? The first scene, or the
traffic stop?
Emotionally, like, I was shaking by the end of that scene.
Okay.
I am hella triggered by traffic stops in general. I've seen my dad get pulled over about 40 times in my lifetime as a kid. I've been pulled over a stupid amount of times for no reason. My husband's gotten pulled over for having me in the car. I just, things like that. And then the whole part where it got flipped, and then the guy's voice was so deep and it was just so ominous. And then you see the mask, and there was just like, there were so many, I had so many complicated feelings. I don't even know. It was so much, but it was so tense too. The way they built it, and the way they built it, they kicked off the scene with a rap song. And I was like expecting a whole different thing to go down from that alone. So I was thrown off from the beginning, but it was really good.
The locking of the gun and the body camera and the do you consent to being filmed, and those are all things that ring to us from nowadays, but it's a completely different
context.
Twist, mm-hmm. right? It's all twisted.
The locking
around.
The locking of the gun was the whole, like, that 30 seconds or whatever was so tense. Like, my whole body was like, I think I made my neck sore because I was literally like, I literally knew something bad was going to happen. I was like, this is awful. Oh my God. It was like, that was, ugh.
And he did too. I mean, the moment you see him see the Rorschach mask, and you're like, you could tell he's like pretty much, you know, he's terrified. He's paralyzed. He just walks back to the car. And, you know, so my husband has the same name as an IRA terrorist. And after 9/11, I don't know if I told the story on the podcast before, when we would go to the airport, they would read his driver's license, type it in the computer, and then they would look at him and slowly back away. It's just like, oh my gosh. So the moment they saw that, and he said he referred to it as a Rorschach mask. So I feel like that's proof to me that Rorschach existed, or that they know Rorschach mm-hmm. existed, and it's a Rorschach mask.
Yeah, I think they kind of confirm it by eventually with like mm-hmm. the video thing, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And some of the things that they ask when we get to the interrogation scene were very interesting, and I have some questions about that when we get there. But the locking of the gun was extremely tense. And the fact that you know something's up with this dude, but then on the one hand you're like, well, if this was race reversed, and you know, would I assume that the guy? I mean, I guess once you see the Rorschach mask, you know this guy's up to no good. But there's also that going back in your head is like, wait, what's going on here? Because everything is so turned around. You know, the gun is locked. They got the body cam, but the races are reversed, and then. He's driving an energy. He's driving a clean energy vehicle. Where you're like, wait, what? He's not. He's a white supremacist. He should be in a pickup truck, like spewing.
Tony, what were you gonna say, Tony?
I was gonna say this is a scene that I noticed that how they're spelling cavalry with a K.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just watched the whole episode with the closed captions on just to see if I was missing. I don't know.
Yeah, I always watch with the closed caption.
So I was like, wait, they're spelling it with a K? That's kind of interesting. That's why I tweeted at you, I think. But
yes, you did. No, and I caught that because that was definitely something that was important to note.
Is it K for the Klan? Do you think?
Probably, most likely.
Yeah, that was what I guessed. But not. Sure, if there's anything else connected to that.
Do we know why, or has anyone thought about why, besides the obvious smiley face reference, we're seeing yellow and red lights instead of our reality's blue and red on the police cars, and then they have, which matches to the yellow masks, and we keep seeing that color, and I wonder why, because
well, yellow traditionally, I have to wonder if it has something to do with what they mentioned later in the show, in this particular episode of the White Knight, mostly because yellow is what you hang in for veterans and for lives lost. And so if you lose somebody,
gotcha.
Who, and then you I was a civilian contractor for the U.S. military, and frequently there would be people, as you drive on base, who would have yellow ribbons hanging in their windows or hanging on their trees, because that was what you do if you lost someone in combat. So I could see, and this does set up something very, very interesting for the future if they decided to do a background episode. If they do go into why police behave the way that they do, and I want to point out really quick, the idea of releasing a gun from a lock really depends on the decision making of the people in power. Police don't trigger me in the way that they trigger a lot of Americans. Being around them, however, being around them for me at least makes me extremely paranoid. Because I sit and I go, you're making decisions, but that has to do with some personal stuff, and it has nothing to compare to anybody else's. It's just that whole thing when he did that, what made me tense was, how do you know that the cop's not in with the dude in the pickup truck?
Yeah, okay, wait.
Yeah.
So let me go on from that for just one second. So this guy wears a panda head.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't dress everything else. He's like, he's pretty much just, he wears a panda head. He's the rules guy. He's the lawyer's guy. But a panda head is black and white, like a Rorschach mask, where the colors swirl around and they never mix.
Ooh.
It did look like he had dark arms, though, when they show him later.
I think we're going to find out that.
I don't know.
It's more complicated.
Yeah.
I did wonder,
but I don't know. I think the reason why he's like that, he's just a little weird, like, nerd guy. And
yeah, I was going to say, I had a note about that. Like, I literally, that I took that as, like, this is the red tape and bureaucracy that comes in with just, like, stacks on stacks of, like, authorizing what cops use or what. I thought this was a brilliant way of showing, like, the bureaucratic side of, and complications of actually doing that, and literally not giving cops the access. You have to literally call them and be like, hey, I need you to buzz me in on my gun. I thought that was more of that. I don't know if I took it as homeboys actually in on it, but I have no idea. But I was like thinking that was more of a commentary on like paperwork and slowing police work down. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he was
red herring.
first time around, he did seem suspicious, and then I saw the later scene, and then I saw the scene again. I was like, "Oh, he's just a little loser. I like him."
Yeah, he just loves paper. Like, he just wants. Yeah, he's a rule follower.
Has to cosplay panda 2K20 cosplay panda. That's good.
Well, I mean, you might get mistaken for some of them other animal wearing people. Yeah, maybe don't cosplay panda.
Don't
cosplay after dark. I don't know. But...
Okay, no. So we've addressed the traffic cop scene. Now, Wendy, what's next on the agenda?
So the traffic cop scene, then he gets shot, but not killed. And Then I believe we cut to Oklahoma, where the wind comes rushing down the plane. And this is when we still realize we're in Oklahoma. I don't like that musical. And I think later on they start talking about it, like that he said his heart, their hearts weren't in it. And I'm like, I don't know if anybody's sorry. I'm sorry if you like Oklahoma. It's like, it is second only to Carousel for my least favorite musicals of all time. But it's just, it's a very corny musical, and you can see these people with the big smiles, and they're like, they did just really not enjoying themselves. But it was a very interesting thing, and you're thinking to yourself, well, this is an alternate timeline. Is this a timeline in which all of the characters of Oklahoma were originally African American? And I think later on they say it was a special play, but it's still part of that getting you to rethink how you see race. In the terms of like, oh, you thought it was this because you don't know. And I did like that, how it just still kept that turning. And it was, of course, the white cop, the white father figure cop that was Don Johnson that was there at the musical. So I think our theory that he is really Night Owl is probably not true at this point. Although there were a lot of little things there to like kind of make you think that, well, wait, but these, you know, she was drinking out of the owl mug from that she got off his desk. So I'm like, oh, look, there's an owl. There's another owl. But I'm like, I think that comes with the owl ship, probably.
Okay, so you notice the two chairs, and you know that there are people who are not here. And that is also important. But then the sheriff leaves. Correct me if I'm wrong. And he leaves and he heads out to investigate what is going on.
Yes.
Yes.
And they ask him if he wants to alert Red and Black, who I think are Red Scare and
Red and Night. Night. Yeah.
Yeah.
Red
and Night. Night. Yeah.
I didn't know that Red had a code name, and I love Sister Night. You know, guys, we could go on and on about but Sister Night. Oh, man. Anyway, we're saving it. Okay. So he says he wants to alert Red and Black, and then what happens?
Then I think we go to the school. Is the school next?
Yes.
Yeah.
He goes to the house and talks to Roberta, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And so what do people think of talking to Roberta? What do people think about that scene?
I don't know. I don't know. Go ahead, Wendy.
Well, the added piece to it where not only am I coming to tell you about your husband being in the hospital.
But don't tell anyone.
Here's your
cover story. Basically interrogating her, yeah.
Of where he is and why he's not around. So it's even worse. And again, it's really for her safety, but at the same time, it feels like fairly insensitive at the time.
I was very interested to see. He was really rushing her, and he didn't seem very aware of her perspective on anything. And she seemed to expect this, but it also introduced an interesting wrinkle that leads into the classroom and the school scene, which is where police officers and people who are police officers have to operate secretly, which I thought was very interesting. And that's why they have to, quote unquote, have to cover it up, which, again, I really hope we find out what happened during the white night, because whatever happened, like, it literally shook. Also, one of the things we have not brought up yet, ladies and gentlemen, is that this takes place in 2019.
Oh, yes.
So that is very important. We neglected that, and we apologize. So this takes place in 2019, where these issues are at the forefront of every single community. And it's really disconcerting to talk about this kind of thing delicately. But honestly, like, he was really pushing her and not paying attention to what she said. And then we go into the classroom.
I think I'll take the other thing. I think he was trying to play it down so that she wouldn't be upset about it and trying to put a positive spin on it, where it's kind of like, he's going to be fine. You'll see him again. He's not dead. Da, da, da. But, you know, I mean, I think she feels, she seems a little shell-shocked, like she's been expecting this, or that, you know, some memory of White Knight and the danger that he'd put himself into.
I also saw this as this a second part of the, like, this episode kind of building this narrative that this dude isn't all that great of a guy. Honestly.
Yeah, there's something like, more to him.
Like, and I think that's one of the, an issue I had with it was an article that IO9 written before. It was their review before I had seen the episode. It was like a week or so ago. It was like they were trying to, Watchmen was trying to portray, it was, at, you know, this dichotomy of, you know, cops versus, you know, white supremacists, and it's not as simple as that. I'm like, and I was like, interesting. But then I look, actually watch the episode, I'm like, that's not what Watchmen's doing at all. Every single officer or, you know, vigilante we've seen so far has all are complicated and not all that, I wouldn't classify them as good people, because their methods are really rough. But I found that scene to be just another setting, just another, you know, building block, and just showing kind of a person he actually is. And it wasn't a person that I actually liked at all.
No. Yeah. Well, okay. And then we head to the school, which had that smiley face motif.
So much.
Love that. That was one of my favorite, like, image, like, from the trailers. I was like, yes, it's still in the actual episode.
Yeah. You also had the owl.
Even before we get to those, they had the newscast with Manhattan on Mars.
Oh yes, no, that was.
It was in the scene, but it was like shown on the screen, right?
Yeah.
Like,
that was transitioning to something. Yeah. I think I can't remember.
The wall is coming down. So it was talking. So she's talking about eggs, and she's talking about breaking this down. I don't have the screen in front of me right now, but. Breaking this down, she starts off by talking about the egg whites are where the protein are, and when you whip the protein, it makes bubbles, and it's the walls of those bubbles are made of protein, and something about how it's hard to blend everything with the egg whites, so you have to separate out the egg whites so that you can mix most of the egg whites so that you can mix the rest of it together and get harmony, is what I got out of it. So it was kind of like, it was kind of, there's something in there, and I'm not sure that it was entirely literal, but you're mentioning white on purpose. You're mentioning separate, because you do see that they've taken all of the cavalry people, or the people that, you know, could, you know, they suspect are cavalry, and kind of pushed them to the edge of town, and how they're tough bubbles to crack, and they prevent integration. And it was a very interesting bit. Just in that making of the egg smiley face. And then we could talk some more about that. Oh, there's also an owl in there too, where she puts the mixer down in between the two plates and it makes an owl face.
Oh.
Yeah. And then she's wearing kind of a Asian shirt. I don't know. Exactly if it's Vietnamese or not, but you first learn that she's from Vietnam.
Yeah, the idea of Vietnam as a state.
Threw me off. I was like, wait, what? And then, but that actually
happened.
I remember like the seeing the hat on the guy in the truck from the traffic stop scene. I was like, there's a lot of stars on that hat. So then when Vietnam became a state, and I was like, wait, what? That explains it. So they obviously have more than 50 states, I'm assuming. Because it's also I also noticed on the flag that for some reason there were less red lines. Usually it's like they represent the colonies. So I don't know. It was really interesting.
Yeah, the circle of stars in the middle and the stripes on the outside and the circle is bigger and there's less room for the stripes. It's a very interesting design. It's the circle design. But the moon cakes were not what you're expecting, I assume. Like you're saying, when it's like, we eat our cookies now. And then they go, okay, and that allows them to introduce that whole concept. And then we get this thing. Redfordations.
I want to say even before we get to that, she's
kidding.
Describing the White Knight when it
yes.
it happened to her, and the way she like talks about what happened. I can't tell if that's like a PTSD kind of thing, or if it's she's fascinated with like the violence part of it, kind
Ooh,
of
yeah.
like.
Yeah, she really seemed like she was telling like a really cool story.
Yeah,
and the
so,
teacher's like,
that was interesting. Yeah, like these are children.
Yeah, almost like it was like happening to someone. She's like, "Ooh, you want to hear a really cool story about my friend?" Like it was like she was. Yeah, it was very like she couldn't catch herself. Like, and then she had to get told by another adult, like, "Hey, these are children." Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, yeah. But you could tell, I mean, that was the point where you realize she's playing this part of the sweet baker who's not a cop anymore, but it's really hard for her to maintain that persona. So that's when the bully, who's kind of your typical white supremacist bully, he's a kid, and I know that later on they have a talk about, well, he's a kid, he's on his way to being a racist, but he's still a kid, but starts talking about it's not reparations, it's redfordations, and if she bought her bakery off of it. So I don't know, we weren't clearly told what redfordations is, and I have three different theories on it. One was my husband's theory, was that it's reparations to the Vietnamese for atrocities during the war. It could be straight up reparations, or it could be something that people were given who survived the White Knight with injuries because think precautions weren't taken beforehand.
You just presented a very interesting theory to me. Vanessa said that there are less stripes on the flag than there were normally. One of the things that I really... There's a lot of stuff, people who are listening to this podcast, that we're going to bring up that would I especially and Wendy are not qualified to discuss. But when you pick it up in the periphery of your mind, you can't let it go. And what that made me think of, and what Vanessa made me think of, was there's an HBO project, actually, that is coming out, which is about what if, and I cannot remember the friggin' name of it.
Is
but
it still coming
remember,
out?
No, they canceled
like
that.
No, okay. It's not Confederate.
It's the other one, right? It's not HBO, it's Amazon, I believe, that's producing that.
Is it Amazon? Okay.
Yeah, I think it's because it's coming from Black showrunners.
Awesome. Okay. So, but the idea that I really liked from that was that the premise of this thing that I can't remember was that after the Civil War, America actually paid reparations to former slaves, and they paid them in states. And they paid them in, I think it was like Louisiana, Atlanta, and like Kentucky or something. They paid them in three different states, and they formed their own country out of those three states. And I have to, when you suggested the thing with the red and white stripes, the red and white stripes represent the original 13 colonies. I have to wonder, where did Redford consider giving up one of those states, or did something happen to those states? That was because we're thinking in terms of reparations. I thought it was Redfordations, as it were. I thought that it would have been, you know, something along those lines, but something could have happened to one of those states. And my bet, truthfully, is that something happened to New York City.
Oh.
Well, New York City's gone.
Well, yeah. And to New York State, even. Like, something that would have happened and spread along those lines. But yeah, that was what that made me think of. And I'm like, okay, well, something happened to one of those states.
No, I think that's a great point. I was actually, I remember looking at something, a scene, I think it was from, it's obviously going to be in the next episode because I think it was from a funeral scene in the trailer. But I remember seeing the circle flag, and then I remember being like, so there, and the guy's flag did not match that flag. So I think there might be two different flags similar to a Confederate flag where they just they're leaving off certain things that aren't relevant to that, you know? And then we also see the Confederate flag imagery later on. So I'm like, I don't know. There's so much flag imagery, and I feel like it has to be on purpose for a reason.
Yeah, I almost wonder if it has to be like a behind the scenes thing where we see like the full concept art on all of these to really draw a conclusion. I don't know. Maybe they'll show more of them later or something like that. But it is kind of, it's hard to guess exactly what's going on. I mean, just based on what we've been given. The flags could be, to me, I'm like, oh, it could be that. It could be, maybe the whole world is the United States. Like,
Likely get explained, yeah, like in later episodes. Well, I love how much world building we're already getting, because we're already seeing kind of like how much how much more imperialistic the United States got after, 1986 or whatever. Like, what happened to Russia? Like, is there still a Russia? Like, I'm really curious to see what the world looks like outside of the United States.
You get to see a little bit of that later, but we don't know where, really.
So. Right.
All right, so what's the next scene?
So they're driving and they're talking.
Yes. And we have, they're basically having a conversation about the little boy being a racist or not. And then, like, alarm goes off, right? And these little baby squids start, falling from the sky. And I was like, it was just the weirdest, grossest thing. I was like, this is nice and wet. Thank you for that imagery.
My squid lives on.
This is somehow the
justice for squid.
Children of the original squid somehow get baby caught squid. Up in the system.
I noticed they were dissolving as they hit the ground, though.
Yeah, they're not like solid. Yeah. They kind of turn. Is viscous the right word? Ew, that's a gross word. Didn't know that.
Oh, Becker.
They're coming from the sky. And then we move on to, like, they get home and we see, like, we start to see more of her family. And I'm going to say this was actually the biggest surprise for me. All the trailers that I've seen, I knew in my head that her journey was starting because her husband got shot to death on whatever that white knight was. And in flashbacks, and he just appears looking fine as hell and alive. I'm like, okay. So I was like, a nice surprise for me. I honestly thought, like, that was going to be her. I did not. And they really, that was the ultimate knife twist at the, like, you know, like later on, like I just knew it was her husband that was gone. Like, that was her fuel, you know? And so when I saw him, like, just being all cute with the little curl, I was like, oh my God, thank you. Anyway, so that was a big surprise.
So my theory, you guys can tell me if this is completely wrong. I don't know how long ago the White Knight was.
3 years.
Do you think these are the children of her co-workers
killed? That's exactly what crossed my mind.
It's possible, but I don't know. I guess I'm not familiar enough with, like, enough adopted people to know how quickly, like, the children would change over to calling them mom and dad, especially the older kid who's like 10.
True.
If it was only 3 years, I don't know
if
he would remember or he would think in that context. But, like, I don't know enough. I have adopted cousins, but I don't know. They call them mom and dad, but I don't even remember how old they were when they got adopted. So
I know the little girl looked at least like 4. So maybe she was probably really young. Yeah.
She's kids. So they have 3 kids, which automatically now I'm terrified, right?
Oh no.
Right, I know. Oh my God.
And then there's the one that was seriously not there at the beginning. Like you have the son, then you have the baby, and then there's the other girl who's just not there.
Wait, there's a third kid?
Yeah, he had to pick her up from school or something.
Oh
yeah, she was there at the dinner.
Completely, I was like, for some reason, I thought they were talking about another day. I don't know that. Okay, so there's a third kid. Wait, I thought that was. Oh, I thought that was their kid. That makes
sense. Yeah, that's what I thought too. And I couldn't say.
So they have 3 kids. Got it.
Yeah.
And then we get the beeper, the page, which is that was another like kind of ring in my head. I'm like, oh yeah, they don't have cell phones. They just have pagers, right? Yeah. They don't. Yeah. Because they don't have internet in that time period in their reality.
Newspaper stuff.
Yeah.
That's a terrible, terrible reality.
So are we going to the bakery next? Do we have to walk to the bakery?
The American, can we talk about American Hero Story Minutemen? Oh my God, the reference. I can't. I love it so much. I love the reference to Ryan Murphy's Infinite series, American Story series. I loved just that little callback. I love the dramatics. Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I guess I'm like, it was what actually distracted me from that was I noticed as she was walking to the bakery, there was a sign for like a Williams company. And I remember in the massacre scene, there was also a Williams company that had an advertisement.
Ooh.
Is I don't know if it's like relevant or if it's just like, oh hey, yeah, this is the same place kind of thing, but that, like, I was like, wait, that's the same name. I mean, no, it's Flint's the common name, but yeah.
These are storefronts. They were the sets were the same. They were just redressed. Like, you could tell that some of the places were.
Well, the font exactly was the same in the new timey one versus the old timey one, but yeah, like, I guess it is meant to be the same place, which I thought, okay, that's relevant. But yeah, the American Hero story. The commercial thing is later, but I did notice all the names. Like, it was Captain Metropolis, Comedian, Mothman, Dollar Girl, Silk Spencer, Night Owl.
Yeah, and I saw someone say, like, oh, this is actually like a direct sequel to the graphic novel and not the movie. But I do love that when they show them later on, like the little opening sequence, that they did a specific callback to the casting of that movie, because Sally Jupiter was literally Carly, I think. I don't know if they used the actual same imagery, but they looked exactly like the Watchmen movie characters.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. It was different from what was like. I think it's because the aesthetic in the Watchmen comic was more 80s, and they wouldn't necessarily be attractive to modern audiences, maybe. But yeah, that was a nice nod.
And then we got to the old man.
Yes, the old man.
So should I give something away?
Okay, yeah.
It's from the trailer. Is it okay for me to talk about it?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. The preview trailer at the end of the episode where he speaks, his name is Will Reeves. And he says he's 105 years old. Mm-hmm. Well, the Will Reeves, his name is given in the, that's from the caption. I don't think they even said it. But he says his name is Will Reeves. Mm-hmm. And he says 105 years old. So if you do the math, in 1921, he would have been 7.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I think we know who he is.
And we know why they were showing that child.
And it could be a big fake out, but that.
And why he liked that movie thing so much, why it was comforting in a way. That's a. There goes your legacy.
Wow. My brain just blew a fuse.
I'm sure there's much, much more to it. I think he's going to be a real. Twisty character, but we'll get to that next week. But I thought that was I think we're all in agreement that he has to be the little boy,
right? I do believe that. And I was worried from the first time I had witnessed him in the trailers. I was like, I really, 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 really hope they don't go down the magical Negro route. Like, I really don't like that, and shows always fall into that route. But after watching this episode, I'm like, I don't think he seems like a diabolic motherfucker, and I'm here for it. And like, I'm really, really excited to see what this dude is up to. I think every time I have an expectation about the show, it just completely, goes in a different direction. But yeah, he's like literally just like sitting outside of her bakery. That's probably, it's like one of those things where it's like, always gonna open soon, but it like never does.
Yeah,
5 years. So it's since she stopped being, a cop, right? So it's been years, and he's observed this. And I got from that point, I was like, oh, he knows she's a cop.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
he totally knows she's a cop. Which is, we find that out later.
Her getting dressed sequence. Oh, fire.
So the combination to that, the room is 1985, by the way.
Okay.
Tony in here with the whip.
I had to rewind for that. I was like, okay. what you type in here?
That's amazing.
But nothing gets baked in that bakery, so.
Right.
She didn't actually bake anything in the scene when she was at the school. She just cracked some eggs.
No, she brought the cookies and then showed them some egg tricks. You could tell her heart wasn't into it. Yeah, she just had other things going on. But no, I love that, like, just the badass sequence. Like, and that was another thing, like, a couple of moments in the episode where I noticed that the music really, the score of the episode was just so, it just packed a punch. And that was it was just that song was just like, it got me all like fired up. I'm like, yeah, what is she going to do next? And it was awesome.
She was great, and she just went and did her thing, and she's like, whoop, this happened, I know exactly what I'm gonna do. and she went to the Nixonville. Park.
Yeah, Nixonville. Yeah. That was hilarious. I mean, and, yeah.
Which I guess is like, I feel like this is some kind of, like, really kind of a dig at Trump, you know, in a way. Are we even allowed to say that on the podcast? Voldemort. But
anyone who would get mad is not listening anymore at this point. So.
Ironically, yeah.
As a Marvel fan, I do have to point out, I'm no stranger to evil Robert Redford. I was like, oh my god. Is the Winter Soldier going to show up?
Oh my god. Legend.
Oh my gosh.
Which is a nice twist that Robert Redford is very cool with that, because once upon a time, Robert Redford would have been in the position of Sister Knight and would have been in the position of Steve Rogers and would have been in all of these positions as the clean-cut, all-American mother flumper. And now he's the epitome of evil, and I appreciate that. But I don't think
Hydra.
Hydra. But I also don't think, given the way that people in the trailer park reacted to him, I don't think he's the bad guy in this case. I think he's probably one of the more liberal presidents.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting twist. But watching Sister Knight kick in, so the episode continues with Sister Knight kicking in a trailer park door, dragging out a dude and putting him in the trunk of her car. And I'm just going to, my only comment on all of Sister Knight in terms of her character is that, God, I love watching her beat people up.
But so, right, so good at it.
This reminded me of Rorschach. It was very much like Rorschach knows, he knows, you know, the black and the white, and it's reversed in this case because this guy smells like bleach. And she's like, I know who's the bad guy. I know, yeah, I'm going to throw him, be violent, like Rorschach would be violent, and just throw him in the trunk. No questions, no talking, no nothing. Just, bam, not even ask him. I don't even think she said a word to him.
No,
she just got him in the trunk.
It's a black and white person who, in a world that is not black and white, and I'm using that as a brief segue to stick in one more little fact that I completely forgot to mention before she goes into the bakery. And she's talking to the older gentleman. There's a newspaper clipping that is extremely important that you guys need to be aware of. It says, fight declared dead.
Yep. Yeah, I get that. Yep. I was like, oh, that's when I realized it was in Tulsa. That was the first time I realized the show was set in Tulsa, because they said Tulsa's son or whatever. But yeah.
Yeah, they still have newspapers.
So, so she has taken him. Now we're back to our regularly scheduled train. She has taken him. She's put him in the trunk of her car. And then...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we get to the briefing. Love that. That was intense. Yeah. That video.
Oh, I have it. I have it written down. Hold on. I can do a dramatic, terrible reading. Who would like me to do a dramatic, terrible reading, y'all?
Go ahead. Wait,
before the interrogation?
No. This is before the
briefing. Yeah, this is the briefing. When they did the video.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I want to hear your wonderful dramatic reading.
Okay, so naturally, I think it is very important, and I'm looking for, because I wrote it down. I wrote it down, guys. Okay, so I think it's very important to give these characters the gravitas and the seriousness, since they are the bad guys. So I'm going to read it in a voice like this. Soon, the accumulated black filth will be hosed away. And the streets of Tulsa will turn into extended gutters flowing with liberal tears. Aw, gosh. Soon all the whores and race traitors will shout, save us! And we will whisper, no. Oh, boy. That sounds like fun. So there you go.
Hey, Rorschach.
Oh, my gosh.
Very clearly Rorschach's speech from the beginning of... Watchmen, the original.
And I take it just as seriously as I took that one. So,
and where do you think they got that speech? You guys, the journal was published. It was published, and that's where they got it.
Published in a source that they trust.
Yes, and this is like the equivalent of publishing a psychopath's manifesto in the whatever InfoWars or whatever, literally, and then all the crazy conspiracy theorists and white supremacists are like, yeah. And it's like, I think, I don't know if someone mentioned this or on the show or if it was like, I just saw a comment, but like they also believe that the squids are a hoax by the government. And I'm like, I don't want to agree, but I also might agree with that personally just at one point. Yeah. Okay. But
so,
yeah, that
no,
was, yeah.
But so I was reading the graphic novel again the other day, and I'm now not sure that he put enough info in there that he even understood the extent of what Veidt was doing enough to tell anybody anything of value in that journal other than spreading his psychosis.
Yeah, I don't think that he all he shared was his suspicions of Adrian, but like he obviously didn't know until because he had sent it off before he'd even gotten confirmation that he had done anything. So really, it probably reads as like rantings and ravings of a madman. Yeah,
yeah. Who talks a lot about black and white, even though it may not have been exactly the same thing. He's definitely a racist, but I think this is taking it. Yeah. Focusing too much on that one aspect.
Oh, listen, let me tell you, the sheer number of people who were very, very hurt after the Watchmen premiere, who were so, Rorschach would never say that about black people. He wasn't a racist. And I'm going,
He may not say that, but, you know, they're giving him too much credit.
He's clearly a bigot. He calls women whores. He wants to investigate Adrian for being gay. Like, come on. Like, the guy's a bigot. He sucks. Like, he may have had some right ideals about certain things. Like, I want things, even in the face of the apocalypse, do the right thing. I get that. I totally get that. But, like, other than that one thing, like, he's not a good dude. And if they're still surprised by that, then that's y'all's
But
fault.
Here's the thing. Is like, so you're looking at politicians, right? And you look at, like, you know, George Bush is not a charmer, right? I don't agree with like most of his politics, but compared to, you know, Mike Pence and Donald Trump, he's a liberal, right? And I think this is what happens when something starts, the snowball starts. And yes, Rorschach was a bad guy, a Nazi, and a terrible human being, and that is said many times in the book. So don't take those words from my mouth. Those words are said by many, many people in the book. But it is then snowballed, you know, and becomes like they said, like she was talking about the egg whites. When you beat the egg whites, they froth, they become these bubbles that don't burst. And that's why you have to separate them out. I think that's, you know, what we're talking about here. Here are some egg whites who've been whipped by Rorschach's journal. All right, we got to pick up the pace here.
Yeah, we do. Well, there's so much going on.
Yeah.
But we go into the briefing, and we learn two things from the briefing. Number one, we learned that vigilantes are employed by the police department, and the police department, if it is required for them to wear masks while on duty, I don't remember if they had an option to or not, but they also have, I'm going to pretend for a second, because they almost seemed like the detective rank, where they have people, they have Red Scare, they have Sister Night, they have people who are actively in costumes running around being vigilantes. And then they also introduce, I don't remember the character's name, somebody help me out, Mr. Shiny Face. We're going to call him Mr. Shiny.
His code name is Looking Glass. Said it, but it was in the captions.
Can we call him Mr. Shiny Face?
I think he's a very interesting character because without the mask, he looks the most like you would expect Rorschach to look of anybody. And he looks like the most like, I'm scared of this. This guy is going to be
bad,
spelling racist, you know, but he's not. You know, he's like, he's on the, you know, well, we don't know yet, but he appears to be the opposite of what you expect him to be. Which may be Looking Glass. Maybe he's a reflection of Rorschach.
We also get another, like a quick look at my pet pirate Jenny, who was piloting later on. She's so cool. I love her.
She is the best mask, I think.
Yeah. She's so stylish. But yeah, I love that scene. I was actually gifting Angela earlier, just like the way the camera like always frames her. Is always looks at her like she's basically a statue, like the way she stands in the briefing and then she moves, the way her body moves in her uniform, it almost changes her, like her the way she just holds herself and walks, completely changes in uniform. It's very like militaristic. It's like someone in a suit of armor almost. It's really cool to watch her transform like that. And Regina King, she's so good.
That adds an extra degree of what to what Laurie has said in the trailers. Laurie says, you know, the mask is people who are hiding from things. Mm-hmm. And then there's also the theme of like the person being who they really are in the mask. That's who she really is, as opposed to like, you know, the suburban mom. That's a really cool dichotomy.
Mm-hmm. So but Don Johnson says to them, put on your faces, not your masks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I thought was very, very Rorschach-y.
So Looking Glass, so Sister Knight goes to the sheriff, and Sister Knight shares that she has a man in her trunk. And nobody is surprised by this, which tells me that Sister Knight,
I know.
Sister Knight is the cool cop that we need to be rooting for, the cool vigilante police officer. There's no way that I could... The cool person we need to be rooting for. Sister Knight is the cool person that we need to be rooting for in all of this. And she...
See, now, it's Watchmen, though. So you say... And I, you know, I'm with you so far, but it's Watchmen. So we're gonna see.
Yeah, there's something to it.
Yeah, I think she may go over the line a few times, but I think, you know,
I think she already has, but I'm still here for it. So I'm team Angela until the show tells me otherwise.
So let's be completely honest. That I know I'm skipping ahead to the end, but Don Johnson is the comedian, and she is Rorschach in this. So we'll see where this goes from there. But you know, obviously she's not Rorschach, but that's the motif that we're dealing with, and she is kind of that badass. I know who the bad guys are. I know who the good guys are. Not to spoil any characters, like I don't feel bad. Like she was, my favorite scene, and I was jumping ahead, was the headboard scene. Like that is the coolest move I have ever seen.
Oh yeah.
And she's like,
I mean, it makes sense too. You don't want it like literally under your pillow, but like no.
Yeah, and she's like, it's like she gets a text, the bullhorn text, and she's like, bam, bam, sweetie, here's your gun, boom, I'm out.
Which also mirrors kind of, I love that, because it mirrors like what happened in the beginning of the episode where husband rolls in, tosses the gun at the wife, and says, let's go. Like, I love that there was like a lot of parallel imagery going on in the episode.
Okay. No. So they decide that they're going to interrogate the guy, and they put him in the pod. Mm-hmm. And the pod looks like a big circular carnival ride. And when they tossed him in, it's a form of interrogation.
Looks like an onion to me. Sorry. like one of those like Vidalia onions. I work in produce too much. Sorry.
It's a valid potential piece of symbolism, but Looking Glass is talking to this guy who's just been brought in, and he asks him a series of questions, which is, I can only assume, it reminded me of this thing in Blade Runner, and it's not a real thing, and I thought for the longest time it was a real thing, where but it's based on interrogation techniques. They called it the Void Conf test in Blade Runner, but the basic premise was that you ask people certain questions and then you gauge their emotional responses. So Looking Glass is gauging his emotional responses while the guy is being disoriented by the images around him. So the images around him are subtly changing into, you know,
it's
American
not about the symbols. Questions.
No.
At all. It's not about how he answers the questions. It's about how his biofeedback response to the combinations of questions and images.
Mm-hmm.
It was very much, he looks like Rorschach Looking Glass, but he acts like the psychiatrist.
Well, I think it's the reason why he's like the Looking Glass is because he's essentially forcing them to look at themselves. So while they're getting disoriented, they're literally looking at their face too while it's happening. Yeah. So yeah. I can only imagine that adds to like the disorientation. And I think that's the reason why he's the one who does those interrogations. Cause like, I think that's partially his purpose. You know what I mean? Because we've seen him yet, like, kicking down doors and beating people up. Like, I think he specifically has a function.
Yeah, he's a psychological warfare guy.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
In the pictures I noticed, the two that I noticed were the flag, though, with the circular star pattern, mm-hmm. and Nixon on Mount Rushmore.
Oh, I saw that, too. I noticed that, yeah.
Yeah.
There was also
a modified modified Confederate flag.
I saw that. Mm-hmm.
That had the snake from Don't Tread on Me in it. That was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That may be a real flag, though. I don't know.
Wouldn't be surprised. He basically confirms to her that she was right. Bleach. And we get her. I love her fake apology for no reason. Loved for no reason other than to have Regina King just strut down the hallway and then just drag his ass into a room. Like it was. And then we didn't even have to see it. And it completely exactly mirrored the panel in when Lori and Dan go to rescue Rorschach and he goes to chase after that guy that was like messing with him or coming after him, and like the door swinging and there's water and then there's blood, and I just was like, oh! It just was such a terrifying thing, because like that guy was dead, so I don't know if she killed that guy.
I was like, oh, I don't think she killed him.
I know, but I was like, it was like the first thing I was like, what the hell? But I love that, like that parallel too. That was amazing.
But the you see these three white guys just waiting outside.
I know. They're like, we're going to let her do her thing.
As you should. As you should.
She just struts out. She has so much swagger in that uniform. She's like, oh, let's go to the cattle ranch and light these dudes up.
And that was an extremely stressful scene as well.
My God. Yeah. Let's get into it. Super gross.
So, yeah, no, it was incredibly gross. But all right, so let's start with when before they start the confrontation, and they're throwing watch batteries into a bucket. Now, let's start with the fact they are watch batteries, Dr. Manhattan connection.
There's a lot of watches in this.
Yeah.
Yes. It's you know, their wristwatches, like the wristwatch that he fixed for his fiance that he had with him in the chamber when he was eviscerated. It wasn't on the counter. You know, it was in his pocket. And just in general, so it's like, so what are they doing with these batteries with synthetic lithium that apparently was toxic? But they're doing something. They have some plan with these watch batteries, because they saved the watch batteries. Well, they tried to save them. Let's say they tried to save the watch batteries. When they were leaving. But
then the watch batteries turn up again, because if you'll remember the guys with the car, they were like, oh, the watch, why are they collecting? What did the sheriffs at one point later said? Oh, why are they collecting the watch batteries? Those are dangerous. So the watches are going to play a very important part in what is happening. And it actually kind of reminded me, because it said lithium batteries, and there was something about them giving people cancer. And that kind of
synthetic
also
lithium, Yeah,
synthetic lithium.
Synthetic lithium,
That reminded me of Dr. Manhattan, because Dr. Manhattan was existing and giving people cancer.
Allegedly. That was That was Adrian.
Adrian gave
him. Yeah, he gave him cancer.
That was in Rorschach's journal.
Maybe I think it was. I believe so. Yeah.
How the people got cancer was in Rorschach's journal.
Oh, yeah. So. And also another Adrian reference, the poison pills that they eventually took. Yeah.
Yeah,
there was a lot of.
She actually tried to save the guy versus.
Mm-hmm. I know, right?
Versus shoving the pill in his mouth.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
Oh well.
The whole scene with them running through the cows, and oh my God, that was just.
But again, these are all things that would have been in Rorschach's journal, right?
Yes.
So the how to give people poison. So they're taking all this stuff. They're like all of the peripheral stuff from Veidt's plan that Rorschach knew about, and they're gonna try and use that, but they don't understand how it all fits together.
Right.
So it's just mayhem. So then there was this great chase with Pirate Jenny and the plane, and
Archie Jr.
Yeah.
I think that was kind of where you're supposed to get that the chief guy is kind of not all good, not all heroic.
Because he
not
took
all...
over from Jenny?
Not just that, but like his like how into like trying to stop like it wasn't just he's taking over her job or whatever, like mansplaining or whatever you want to do, but it was just how forceful he was. Yeah, like he was just It was like he was almost bloodthirsty in a way.
Wondering if these people know something he doesn't want to get out. We don't know. Maybe he's involved and these people would have given him up, but he, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, like he couldn't let them go.
Yeah, he could not let them go. And the way that he gets them is when, if you remember, when Silk Spectre goes into the owl ship looking for a cigarette lighter and she accidentally turns on that flamethrower. Yeah. That was the same flamethrower. I don't know if that's significant or anything. I think it was a nod. But look, this, if you forgot, this is the owl ship. Remember? Flamethrower.
And speaking of like the planes, was that, I don't know if I remember correctly, there was planes in the beginning sequence, right? Yep. And then they had the same style plane that they were getting away with, which I'm trying to figure out if they just like, is this the same style? Have planes not evolved since then? Like, I mean, clearly they have, or they just, it's just like one of those, like, is that like an, like a, one of those, you know, restored like models? I like, that was just like the one thing I was just like, is that from the same year? What the hell is that?
In the world of Watchmen, they travel by dirigible. So if you notice, the sky isn't full of planes, it's filled with dirigibles, because they didn't have the Hindenburg. I think it's maybe, it's supposed to evoke the plane from the beginning. Like, I think it's supposed to get that emotional response. I don't know that it's the same plane.
Right, but like the way they said that, like, they have a plane, like, it sounded like they weren't, like, who just, you know what I mean? Like, it sounded like they weren't supposed to have, they weren't, who's, like, most people don't have access to that kind of stuff. Like,
yeah, it may be,
you know what I mean? That's like, well, yeah, most, yeah, I'm sure most of it's, like, that's what I was curious about that. But
they also had a Gatling gun, right? Or whatever this is, like Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what that was specifically was called, but they had a truck mounted machine gun, which is an anti aircraft gun, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was a little bit terrifying. Like, they, you know, how does someone get that?
Which is a relevant topic now. How do people get weapons that they're not supposed to have? They have their hands on, which I find an interesting dichotomy, where you have all these cavalry people running around with unauthorized illegal weapons, and the police are like struggling to get their, to get authorized for weapons, causing a supreme imbalance. Like, at that point where he's like, everyone feels that their life is threatened, let's get these weapons going. Because how can you fight a war when one side has machine-mounted or truck-mounted machine guns and you guys have cute masks? You know what I mean? Like,
that's what the whole thing about with John Johnson basically said. All right, rules are done. Everybody gets a gun.
Yeah.
Which, again, feels like there's a reason why they had that rule. I think we're going to see why.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. I fully believe that there was something else led into White Knight besides just that. I wouldn't put it, I'm not gonna rule out that police brutality did not led up to this at some point. That there was a sequence of events.
I'm telling you right now, this is one thing that from Watchmen over and over again, and you're gonna tell me I'm crazy probably like 6 or 7 times. But everybody's dancing to somebody's tune. It may not all be Vite this time, because there's that other lady. I think this is... I think that we're going to find out that the cavalry is a cog in a machine. And that's not unlike the real world right now.
Well, layers within layers.
I guess I'm going to be I'm kind of a downer, but I did not love that shootout scene. Like, I don't know. I my note on it was shootout, IDK, boring. I don't know. It was just,
I couldn't watch a lot of it, but
yeah. Like, that was the point when I was like, okay, let me check Twitter real quick while this is going on. Like,
wait, even like the plane battle?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, I watched it for the see, like, okay, he's trying to get, he's, well, she was trying to aim on them, and then he like took over and back in a little, you know, a little wild, but I don't know, like, for me it didn't do it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it's,
I
was just
worried they
were
gonna die, and I didn't want Pirate Jenny to die. I mean, I figured out Johnson didn't have long, but
yeah,
Pirate Jenny to go now.
Yeah, the way he was talking, like, this, it's my funeral, and the cute scene at dinner, and you knew something was going to happen. But...
Oh, did we skip over dinner?
No, that's right after.
Oh, okay.
Or not right after, but it is. No, it is right after, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, where he's doing blow in the kitchen.
Yeah. All right. So that was that. They walk out of the ship and they're kind of like, this is a victory. And even though it's not really a victory, but they think it's a victory. So they are going to celebrate.
And they go to the house, and then they have a prolonged sequence wherein the sheriff starts singing Oklahoma. The only note that I had...
Wait, no, before that one is actually the castle scene.
Oh yeah. We can't skip over Vite, or in the English country gentleman.
Yes, in the credits for the previous day... Lord of a country estate.
Wow.
They don't even like spoil it.
We're gonna keep dragging this out.
We all know who he is. It would be a shock if it wasn't. Okay.
Somebody on Twitter pointed out, and this is not me, someone literally pointed this out in terms of crediting, that the castle in the English countryside looks almost exactly like the castle on Mars.
Yeah, that was because I was gonna mention it, so that was at Uber Kryptonian.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. At Uber Kryptonian. Thank you.
Okay. So here, you're ready for my theories. Okay.
Okay.
I feel like, and we could talk about how weird these people are. They're definitely clones, right? He's big on clones, and he had a lot of male female servant teams. We know some things from the credits, and I don't know if you want me to, if that's a spoiler that we shouldn't talk about.
We could talk about it.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, the female servant is a clone of Marionette.
Okay.
If Marionette is, if you remember, we talked about Punch and Julie with Captain Adam.
Yeah.
Marionette and Mime were the. It like went to the original Watchmen, but they were in like Doomsday Clock. And I don't know if they were in any of the before Watchmen, but they're definitely in Doomsday Clock a lot, where they made their own versions of Marionette and Mime. So Marionette has yet to show up was not in the original comic book, but was based on the childhood comics character Julie. And this girl is a clone of her, which is interesting. Why he's made a clone of her, I don't know. How many more of them are there? We don't know. I do think that the male clone is a young Dr. Manhattan, and that he is trying to create. You can tell me I'm totally crazy, but I think he, you know, when he gives him the watch as a present, and it's the father's pocket watch. If you guys recall from on Mars, when he talks about the moment when his life changed, when his father decided that he wasn't going to be a watchmaker, and he was trying to repair his father's pocket watch and just threw it away. But he had left out the designs, and the young clone had rebuilt them. So my thinking is that he's John and our clone, and that he's going to try and recreate the experiment to make his own Dr. Manhattan. And that's the Dr. Manhattan we see in the credits.
Mm.
I mean, in the trailer. Yeah. Cool. So that's my theory about what's going on in the castle, and that he's been spending the last 7 years, obviously, because it takes 7 years to be declared dead. Obviously, he's probably got other things going on, but he's...
It takes 7 years to be declared legally dead?
Of being missing, yeah.
Wow. Okay, I learned a thing today.
Of course, that's don't commit any crime. Who knows about England? But he's been missing. He's declared dead, not dead. Declared dead, and obviously we know he has some kind of anniversary, and that the cake doesn't taste good, which I thought was very interesting because it's very ornate. They spend a lot of time making it look like, and this may be a hint, they're making it look like what it's supposed to look like, but on the inside it's different. But yeah. Do we think is the first servant that he pulls when he pulls up on the horse, is that the same guy? Like, does he only have two servants, or are there more?
There are more because you can see like somebody like by the gate when he pulls in. That can't be the guy Alphonse who goes like to the horse. So he has several people there.
Yeah.
It's just I'm not sure. I don't think Alphonse is supposed to be the Phillips guy.
Yeah, it's they're all on. It's like his island, right? And these are all the mm-hmm. these are all clone people. But he has the technology. I will say one of the things that I was missing, and I'm hoping it shows up later in the series, is there was a behind the scenes where they had a plushie Bubastis, and now I so want a plushie Bubastis.
Someone make plushie Bubastis. It's only on Kickstart it.
But all right,
HBO
so, yeah,
made dragon plushies. They can make plushie Bubastis.
Yeah, right. I think there will be a plushie Bubastis at some point. Like you go into Hot Topic or New York Comics or wherever you get your Funko Pops.
You can make dire wolves and dragons. You can make us a Bubastis. But yeah, anyway, so Phillips is the clone, and then we go back to them, and they're singing Oklahoma, and we learn about the presidents,
and we learn that she lists off the presidents. The kids do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there's and only Nixon. Two after Nixon, yeah.
Right, because Redford's been
Ford.
Redford yeah, Truman, Eisenhower, Nixon, Ford, Redford. Sorry, Vanessa, you were gonna say.
Because Redford was president. Has been president for the last how many years?
I think reality? I said 30.
Yeah.
I just thank God we have that amendment for term limits. Please, nobody do anything to the Constitution so that we can, you know, we have people ruling for 30 fucking years.
Everybody, knock on wood, right now. They can.
Yeah, cross your fingers.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Is there something about Curly? Did anybody think that there's something? How does Curly die? I mean, how does it end for him? Like, does he have a happy ending?
This is not that kind of a musical. This is Surrey with the Fringe on top. It's about like love in the country fair kind of musical.
You mean everything isn't death, decay, and torment?
It's not West Side Story. This is Oklahoma, you know, where the winds come rushing down the plain.
Spoil it for us, though.
I think it's all about he's trying to get this girl, or the girl's trying to get him, or something like that. It's that kind of a play. I can go look up what actually happens to Curly, but I don't think that's. I think you were just supposed to see that he has this soft side, and he hugged everybody in the family. So to me, like, we were wondering afterwards, it's like, did he raise her? Is he her father? Because they definitely have that kind of a father-daughter relationship, even if he's not her real father.
He didn't seem that old, though. No, I mean, like, she's not like old, but he didn't seem old enough to be her father.
Don Johnson?
Maybe in real life. Like...
Yeah, I didn't get that. I honestly didn't get father daughter vibe from them. I got more like mentor mentee kind of
that.
She's learned a lot from under him. You know, like he's like good looking out for her. I don't know if I got like more because like she didn't seem like.
But they go to plays together, and he hugs her husband. They're very close.
It's a legacy thing that like Bruce would take Dick and Damien and Jason on them to play. Well, maybe not a play, but
he's her, you know what it is? He's her Hollis Mason.
Yeah.
And just like Hollis Mason, she what happens to him happens to him, because after they finish the dinner, she and him are talking outside, and that's when they discuss the lithium batteries officially. Synthetic lithium batteries officially, and then she goes home, and there is an amazing sex sequence.
I would just say it was the night of butts, because just before I watched Teen Titans.
I know, yeah, Titans.
It's not the white night, it's the butt night.
Honestly, it was very much a parents, like, they're trying to be quiet, they're hiding in the closet.
Suburban mom and dad, right?
So they, and then she gets a phone call, and on this phone call is voice.
He gets a phone call.
He's the page.
He gets the page, the officer woke up.
Yep.
Which I immediately knew was suspicious. Like, And the music started playing. That's when I noticed the music a third time. And I was like,
the picture of him and his dad.
Yeah. And it's like, and he said, well, it'll be my funeral. And like, you knew, okay, this is what him
starting. Gonna... Yeah. And then he said he told her he was going to have one of the officers drive him. And he, of course, didn't. And then I thought I was just like, oh, you know, he's high on coke. He'll just, you know, flip his car over. Or something more ominous happened. And of course, the more ominous option happened. And then, right, we go into the scene where she gets the call, right?
Can we, I just put something together here that I find very, very interesting. And it goes into the call. And I'm going to drive it home. We count off on our fingers the different original Watchmen characters. We know that Vite is still alive. Sister Night, I'm going to propose, is a stand-in for Night Owl. We have yet to meet a stand-in for Silk Spectre. I have a feeling it's going to be Laurie Blake.
Yeah.
The Sheriff is the comedian.
The Sheriff is the comedian. I think she's Rorschach.
I think she's Rorschach.
No, because
he reacted with violence too when he found out Hollis died. Like, I think that she's more in. I think she's going to end up more in line with Night Owl. That was the most interesting Dan Driver ever was to me, in my opinion, was when he like finally was just like in fury over Hollis's death. But anyway,
the Sheriff. Okay, so let's get through this so that I can make my point. Because I was gonna, okay, so she's on the phone with him, and with this mysterious voice, and he says, I know who you are, no masks, and tells her to go to a specific location. She drives to the specific location, and she sees the old man in the wheelchair sitting there, and I put down on the live tweet, and I'm really sad this didn't happen, that he looked like Hooded Justice, because they dressed him like Hooded Justice in the purple shirt and the red overshirt, and I was like, that is definitely evocative of a Minuteman color scheme. So I'm just going to put that out there for people to ponder, because they definitely dressed him like Hooded
Justice. That was my thought in the trailer. And especially now that you see the trailer for next week where he's kind of claiming he did it, which of course he couldn't possibly have done it, but it is a noose, which was Hooded Justice's
thing.
And if he's the Bass Reeves like family member and he has a heroism in him.
Yeah.
Guys, well, he's definitely his hero. Bass Reeves was definitely his hero.
Well, I mean,
a similar costume into that movie. I don't think Bass Reeves ever wore a mask in real life. I'm just going to throw that out there. I think that
he was the basis. He was the basis for the Lone Ranger. So if he was not masked, but he definitely had that sense of heroism. I remember.
Well, you know, he's definitely a hero. Yeah, he was definitely a hero. He only killed 14 people, and they were all in self-defense. And I don't know if that's true, because this is a legend and stuff like that. But it was like, that's how he is portrayed, as being just this, like, you know, superhero kind of guy.
I need to go back to this comment of, we know we couldn't possibly have done that. I'm going to propose a theory that may or may not, they may get debunked in the next episode, but we see two instances, actually multiple instances, but two very specific instances where, as a little kid, this kid gets shot at. You can see him flinching from the bullets. We don't see them hit him, but they could be bouncing off him. We don't know. It's chaotic. Then he gets his trailer gets blown up, and it looks like everyone is dead. He's surviving. The baby's just wakes up, so maybe who knows? The kid is literally survived two specific. You can see him specifically surviving two life-threatening situations. With the Superman, Supergirl allegory surrounding him, then we get him asking her earlier, you know, can I lift? Do you think I can lift 200 pounds? And then we see a dead dude in a tree with him underneath it. So I'm just saying, I don't know. I just don't want to rule out that he's not enhanced in some way, shape, or form.
The way that the preview made it sound, I got the idea that he may have like hung him up.
Yeah.
Not have killed him.
Yeah, I don't know if he killed him, but I do think he hung him up
with one shoe. So there's some significance maybe to the one shoe.
Okay, and the one shoe, and then the badge on the ground, because the badge is the new comedian's smiley face pin.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So that's why he's not a good person per se, but And that comedian's death. So a cop died in Tulsa, a comedian died in New York. So that's where the comedian is. So it, as the series, I have a feeling we'll see lots of characters step into the different tropes of the Watchmen characters. But I was going to say that was he was the comedian trope. He fell into the, you know, cause he was doing all these different things that were a problem. And then he fell into the comedian trope.
Before we get to the wrap up, can we talk about the photo of the dad? Because did anybody else, there was a linger on the photo of him as the black and white photo of him as a little boy, probably in the 50s with his dad. And I'm wondering if that's supposed to be important.
Probably.
Like, it's a part of me is thinking, and this the timeline may not, you know, line up on this, but was his dad that young Klansman that they lingered on in the beginning?
I don't know that. I mean, it's possible, but the timeline.
People change. Things change. But it's just. I'm wondering if there's a deeper connection that maybe there's more to this cop, the comedian allegory than we previously thought.
Yeah, that I guess it's like I'm thinking like. Sense. My grandmother's 91. My dad is like 65. So I'm thinking, isn't the guy who looks as old as that? Could his father be that
I'm
old?
I'm telling you, Don Johnson was an adult when I was a baby, and I'm in my 40s. Johnson is not young.
Yeah, but is he old enough to have a relative that old? Like, I don't know.
Can I also point out that he was married to a redhead? A comedian trope. Die.
Yeah. Yes.
Who was a campaign manager?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was in politics.
Yeah, she was in politics. I don't know if that signifies anything, but it was definitely brought up.
So we've stumbled a lot, just mostly because this episode is just so incredible. And well, let's talk for a moment about what we thought overall, because it's clear you guys have to understand we have a group chat, and in the group chat we were all like hammering, and I just feel like I'm not giving everybody enough information. So, but I'm wondering how many other people here feel overwhelmed, because I certainly do, and I love it.
Overwhelmed by the show. By the show, by the episode?
By the episode.
Yeah, like, I mean, yeah. I was blown away, honestly, by the amount of world building that kept happening. Just like every little, everyone keeps asking, like, oh, was there significance in this picture or whatever? I'm like, honestly, there probably is, though. Like, everything felt, every image, every pause, everything felt so significant in building the world that we're seeing. And that's a lot for a first episode, but I think they did it in a way that actually made sense and it carried the narrative in a beautiful way. But I thought it was wonderful. I thought I'm also terrified of what's going to happen in the next few episodes. Like, I'm always prepared for the worst, but I've watched a lot of his shows that he, you know, Damon Lindelof has written and done, and I've loved most of them. So yeah.
Tell me, what do you think?
I think I said, like, in the group chat, even, like, I don't know what's going on, but I like it. Because it is, like, there's so much that could happen or could mean something. And it's really, like, I wrote down even the license plate on her car, which I don't think it means anything. But what if it does? I don't know, like, that kind of thing. So, like I said, I have 3 pages of notes here, and I don't even know if I got everything that seemed it could have been relevant down. So it's very interesting. I liked how they were mean with the credits, and they, for the main cast at least, they didn't put who they were playing.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh man, I thought we'd get a little spoiler.
They didn't say Angela's name until almost the very end.
No, the teacher said her name in the beginning.
She did?
Yeah, it was written on the board as well.
Oh,
I didn't remember if it was in chalk or dry erase though.
It was chalk. It was like a green chalkboard, I think. I thought.
Which is weird because they don't really have those. I mean,
chalkboard? Like, no, I know.
It's not the thing anymore.
Right. Yeah.
They have a projector in my kids' class, so they just project it type in the computer or touch on the tablet. I think the projector might have a touch screen.
Oh, man.
She's crazy. Yeah, and there's the thing, she's looking at it like, it's obviously a really old machine. And I'm like, how old am I?
So let's wrap up with what we think is going to happen in the next episode, or a pet theory. What do you guys want to see in the next few episodes?
I want to see, I mean, you guys already know, I want to see more of Lori. I want to see Lori and Angela interacting. I just want to just know, Lori's our only confirmed character from the show currently, like that the show has acknowledged that is Silk's, the former Silk Spectre. So this is our true sequel to the book. So I really want to see her. I want to know what happened to her since then. That's literally all I care about right now.
Okay, Tony.
I'm saying maybe like a little less action. I don't know, I'm kind of bitter, but story wise, like, I really don't want the children to die. That's one thing. They were very cute. And Pirate Jenny, I want to know some stuff about her because she had a very nice design. Looks so cool.
And Wendy, what would you like to know?
Well, I want to not be able to figure it out, but I want to think that I'm figuring it out. And I think Lindelof should be able to pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I want you to think you know exactly what's going to happen, and then at the end, but it's still at the end, I want it to be everything was part of Veidt's plan. I don't know if we're going to get that. I don't want to be underwhelmed by Veidt's plan. If Veidt's plan really is, he's just making a Dr. Manhattan to tell him that he did the right thing, I'll be very depressed. Like, if he's not responsible for what's going on in Tulsa, then I'm going to feel let down. But unless this new lady is really awesome, and that might be.
Yeah, I like the new lady.
I'm interested in that lady.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Truthfully be happy with more world building.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see, like, I want to know, like Vanessa said, I want to know where America stands in the world. I want to know everything about it. Like, I want to know more about what the media looks like. I love that they have the American superhero story. I love that. Like, I want to know where the media is at. I want to know what the kid, I mean, like, I really want to know, like, what do the kids do for fun? What do they think of, like, superheroes? And I also want to know, and I want to see lots and lots, and I tweeted this last night, I want to see lots and lots of Sister Night cosplayers, and I want to see more cosplayers.
Yes.
These new #cop vigilantes, whatever, because the less Rorschachs we see in the world, the better. So.
Cosplay Panda.
Yeah, cosplay Panda's a good one.
Cosplay Panda. And then I also want a plushie of Asbestos, but that is HBO.
Absolutely.
HBO, we need this. Anyway, so Wendy's going to take us out.
If you would like to contact Watchmen Podcast, you can email us at watchmentvpodcast@gmail.com. You can post a comment on our website, watchmenpodcast.com. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can call us at 918-200-9103. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram at Watchmen Podcast. On Twitter, you can follow us at Watchmen Talk. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio. We always love it when you give us feedback and ratings. Watchmen Podcast is part of the DC TV Podcast Network. So if you're interested in other DC shows, you can check out Batwoman Podcast, Black Lightning Podcast, DC TV Classics, DC's Legends of Tomorrow podcast, iZombie Radio, Krypton Podcast, Stargirl Podcast, Supergirl Radio, Swamp Thing Radio, The Flash Podcast, and of course, Watchmen Podcast. You can subscribe to DC TV Podcast on Apple Podcasts and follow DC TV Podcast on Twitter and like DC TV Podcast on Facebook. Until next time, tick-tock.